Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beatty. And yeah, welcome to the best political podcast in the country.
Yeah, you know this. Probably Southern Africa, the whole continent, actually. Let's just claim it. You got to. This week, we've got another dope episode for everybody. It's the 14th of May, 2017. And in studio, we have Mr. AC Lumumba, who's joined us. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, we hope to have a very fruitful and exciting conversation. A lot of people have actually said, when are you guys getting AC on the show? So
that's what she said.
So some people are actually...
Already ever controversial.
Because we've had Nomaliso on the show a couple of times.
And she's a star, isn't she?
Yeah, no, she is. She's a very fiery character. Mm-hmm. So from there, you know, people wanted to know, okay, so let's have AC. Let's hear what's going on with AC.
Right. Well, something I want to get off the bat real quick is, like you said, it's the 24th of May.
14th of May.
14th of May, sorry. And that makes it Mother's Day in Zimbabwe.
It is,
so
indeed.
I want to take this chance to wish your mothers a happy Mother's Day. I want to wish the listeners' mothers, if they are mothers who are listening, I want to wish you all happy Mother's Day. And, of course, the mother above all mothers, and that's the mother to my son. I want to wish a very happy Mother's Day together with my mom. So, yeah, I'm happy.
I thought you were about to say Dr. Mai there. I was going to be really disappointed.
Oh, well, you know, she's a mother too. So, you know, happy Mother's Day to Dr. Mai and Dr. Mchangirai. All the women who are married to politicians who are doing well or not so well for our country. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. And, the reason I did, you know, just as a disclaimer, why I haven't been doing any interviews, as you would have noticed, but the reason I decided and agreed to do this one is I've always pushed for young people. Mm. And I think there is a space in this country which we have to make exclusive for young people of this country. Now, ordinarily, you guys would struggle to get the bigger interviews from anybody else. You know, in fact, it's easier for the mainstream media to get interviews than for you guys. But I believe there is no one we should be pushing or supporting more than you guys. And I want to congratulate you for this setup you guys have got here. You know, I know Tawanda well. You know, we just met today. But I just want to say thank you guys for what you're doing. I appreciate it deeply. We don't always have to agree on everything. But what I definitely agree with you on is that this platform has got to be the biggest platform in Africa. And if there's anything I can do or I can encourage anybody else to do, I want to do that. So well done. Keep it up. It's going to get tiring, but don't stop because this country needs you more than you think.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for that.
All right.
So let's get into it. What's AC been up to? Last we heard, you were in South Africa, mm-hmm. In and out of South Africa. I want to know what's happening with your court case as well, mm-hmm. Because those are some of the things that the media has been picked up,
right.
That's been picking up. So what's AC been up to in the past, I don't know, year or so, since 2017 started?
Okay, so I spent literally the last 9 to 10 months of my life doing one thing, which is pushing the agenda that young people have got to participate in politics. You know, I started making this noise before anybody else started making this noise. Now what seems like a common chorus is something I've been pushing from the get-go, and that is young people have got to begin to participate in the political dispensation of their own country. So that's what I've been focusing on. But what happens with this focus is it's trial and error. So you have to try a lot of different things and see what works and see what doesn't work. But you should never be afraid to let go of what doesn't work and move on to what does work. I'm particularly focused right now on young people who have made it clear that they intend to run in 2018. So those are the young people who will then be responsible for all the other young people who have been reaching out or trying to participate in politics. My time in South Africa, I've been spending that time networking with Zimbabweans who are in South Africa, talking to them about how we can work together to put money behind the young people who do want to run. Because the biggest handicap young people are going to face in 2018 is how do they fund their interest to run? How do they fund their campaigns? Ultimately, politics and elections comes down to who can afford to beat the other competitor. I haven't seen any way in modern politics where a winner has been the person who had the least money. Normally, the winner of the race is the guy who had the most money. Now, I need to make sure that if young people are going to say we want to run, they have got the most money to be able to build such a campaign. So I've been spending a lot of focus and a lot of time on that in South Africa. But yeah, I guess that's what I'm busy with. And I'm going to stay busy with this until 2018, the agenda of making sure if there's a young person out there who says, I want to be a member of parliament or a councillor in my country, resources are made available to help them do that.
Does this mean that the young person has to be an independent, or it doesn't matter what political faction or political party that they're running behind? So if I was going to run on a PDP ticket, but as a young person, I also needed some support, would you support me if I was going to be a young person running in ZANU-PF, in MDC? Mm-hmm. Or are you saying the people that don't fall under the banner of the political parties?
Okay, so the clearest way to answer that question, Tawanda, is I have a natural selfish interest towards young people who are pushing the same ideology that I push. And that ideology is that Zimbabwe must be a prosperous nation, but the pathway to that place called prosperity is paved by the ideas of young people. The building blocks to that get us to that place we all call prosperity, whatever your version of prosperity is, that pathway must be charted and built by the ideas of young people. So I'm more inclined to young people who are running from that front. But this is a generational responsibility which requires a generational consensus. It's not the reason we created Viva Zimbabwe was not because Viva Zimbabwe is the perfect solution, but it's because there was no other vehicle that made room exclusively for young people. If you go to any of the other political parties, at least the ones that we call mainstream, there is no clear pathway of how young people begin to be noticed, how their ideas begin to be heard. So that's what Viva Zimbabwe came out to do. But to the extent of answering your question, so are we going to support all young people? Absolutely. If you're a young person and you have interest to get into politics, I want to make sure you get a shot too. So we're supporting everybody. That's why I now play more with the language of class of 2018. It's a class. And the class can come from different schools, can come from different backgrounds, different races. What should combine us, or rather unite us together, is we share one common undoubtable interest, which is we all have to be alive, or we are all going to be alive in the future of Zimbabwe.
Have any of these young people come forward? Are there names? Do you have numbers? Maybe you don't want to share names, but are there numbers? We've had this discussion on the podcast before, and we've said, what are some of the things that stop young people from running, and money was definitely one of the main ones. I always come back to ideology, that mm-hmm. a lot of young people don't have an ideology, they don't know what they stand for, mm-hmm. and that hinders them from then articulating what it is that they will deliver when they come into politics.
Right.
So are there any people or any numbers that you said we've got maybe 15 or 20 people so far that we know definitely come 2018 we're supporting?
Okay, so our drive has been two-pronged. You know, looking at the young people who want to run as parliamentarians and the young people who want to run as councillors. As far as the young people who want to run as parliamentarians, we have a footprint in every constituency across the country. So there's no constituency in Zimbabwe where a young person, at least one young person, hasn't come forward and said, I would like to contest. Can you guys have a chat with me? As far as the councillors are concerned, we have just a little over 1,000 councillors who are needed. We haven't filled all the interest for all the councillors, but that's also because I think a lot of young people don't even know the very basics of what ward do they fall in. You know, a lot of young people don't know the difference between a ward and a constituency and a senate. And these are some of the civic educational programs that we need to roll out to clarify what the variance is. But yes, we have over 210 parliamentarian interests. We have, I think, slightly over 300 councillor interests. But what I also know from history, rather from experience, is what happens is the closer you get to election day, the more people start to come out. But not only the closer you get to election day, it's more psychology. The more people see other people coming forward, then they'll say, oh, okay, so I guess if you could go, then I want to go too. So I have no doubt that when the time comes, every seat is going to be contested by young people. The question is, are we going to be able to make them win?
Now, you say we. Who is we?
Okay, so I say we from two plurals. I say we from Viva Zimbabwe as we, but I say we as young people, as a general young person. You must remember, before AC Lumumba is a politician, before AC Lumumba belongs to Viva Zimbabwe, I'm a Zimbabwean. You know, I'm a Zimbabwean who is a young person, I age 29 years old. So I say we about me and you. So when if you decide you want to contest, I consider you one of me.
Okay, no, fair enough. I was saying we in terms of we have 210 so far. So you mean in terms of Viva Zimbabwe, as the vehicle that is driving absolutely this thing?
I'm wondering about, and you know, what is the basic criteria for Viva picking some of these guys besides being young and putting our hands up? Sort of the problem with the MDC run councils are these councillors, essentially a lot of them weren't qualified or didn't have a lot of experience in running things, and that's what has led to a lot of the degradation in our town and city councils across the country. So what are we using as a criteria besides the fact that they're young and they put their hands up?
Okay, so what you have to, you know, understand clearly in a democratic setup, Tawanda, is it's not the responsibility of Viva Zimbabwe to decide what type of a person can run or can't run. You know, they're not running for us. They're running for their constituents. It's the responsibility of the constituents to decide what type of member of parliament, leadership, councillor, president that they want. We can't dictate anything outside of the people's will. So ultimately, each constituency must decide what type of candidate it has. What we can do is prepare those who have lifted up their hands to say we want to run. Because I could say I want people with doctrines or PhDs or degrees only, but if they don't come up, then I don't have them. So the method we choose to use is when a young person comes forward and says, I take interest in running, I would like to be deployed under the banner of the party. We then go through our own orientation program where we train them and equip them in the areas we believe make up a good leader. We can't give them anything else except leadership tuition, because everything else is going to be constituency based. I'll give you an example. The members of parliament, the electorate of Kariba, which is a fishing economy, their needs and desires from parliament is very different from the needs and desires, legal needs and desires, from the members of parliament from Marlborough. So you'll find that in Kariba, they'll say, well, we want a law that favors free imports of fish nets. And then you'll find that law is not necessarily the same law when you come to Marlborough. So I cannot dictate anything as far as what type of person comes up, except the ability to teach them what they must do with the needs of their constituents. And that is my focus, training them once they've come up.
Okay, I want to ask on the issue of Viva. Now that you've mentioned that Viva is the vehicle that would be driving, you know, this initiative, how do you balance people's perception of Viva? Because at the launch last year, you came out and that's when you said, "F you, Mr. President, fuck you," and that caused a whole storm, and it became this perception of Viva of, you know, is this a bona fide organization? Is this something that, you know, has credibility or has the substance to drive something going forward? A lot of people then say, but AC is very controversial. All he likes is the media spotlight. So how do you then get people to trust that this is something that they can be involved in and that it will function to the outcomes that people want to get out of it?
I think you have to be able to categorize and clarify which people you're talking about. Because when you say people, you know, which people?
Even young people like myself, right? So I was at the launch of what you call it. And I, for the first, you know, half hour or whatever it was, you were giving your speech. And it was, and everything was, okay, I'm listening. This is very interesting. I'm, you know, thinking about it. And then you pulled that stunt. I'll call it a stunt.
Right.
And for me, everything then at that launch became about that specific stunt.
For me, right?
And it pulled away from what Viva or what it was you were saying before, right? And then I then start to question, well, was that a necessary stunt to pull? I'll probably even ask you why it was that you, you know, you ended up saying it, because it drew away from the broader argument of what Viva, I think. This is my personal view, but I also believe there are other people who share my view. They might not be the majority or whatever, but I think, you know, that's a view or something that I think needs to be addressed, which is why I'm asking it.
Okay. So your view is just as valid as the next person's view, including an opposite view to yours.
And I think, agree.
You know, the idea and beauty of democracy is that everybody should be allowed to have a view. Now, that also includes me.
Mm.
It also means I should be allowed to have a view the same way you're allowed to have a view. Now, I made it, I'm glad you said you were there. So I made it very clear at the launch that my function, to the extent of delivering a Viva Zimbabwe speech, I did.
Mm-hmm.
I finished it. I announced that I finished it. My exchange of banter, which I choose to call it, with the president, was from a personal preference position. I was speaking on behalf of Lumumba, and I also made that very clear. I mean, you were there, so you'd have heard me say, now I am speaking on my own behalf. Again, remember, these institutions we're talking about, so, you know, whether it's Viva, whether it's MDC, whether it's ZANU-PF, whatever institution it is, before people belong to these clubs, they are their own people. Now, I have my own personality, which is the personality I am allowed to also represent. You should never be find yourself in a place where you think a political party is a homogeneous entity. And this is the trouble I think exists a lot, where people say, oh, because you're in Viva, you're this type of person, or because you're in ZANU-PF, you're this type of person. It's, these are not homogeneous entities. You can be in ZANU-PF and have your own ideas. You can be in MDC and have your own ideas. You can also be in Viva and have your own ideas. Now, to the extent of what I think matters, I think what matters is when you as Chris have to go and vote, you're not voting on what Lumumba said or didn't say. You're voting on what you want your future to look like or not to look like. The trouble we have, and it's not just you, it's actually, I think, a generational thing. We've become obsessed with big men politics. We've become obsessed with what did Lumumba do, what did Tinaibiti do, what did Maimujuru do. And we spend so much time talking about people that we don't spend any time talking about what these people want to do. Now, I am not running for political office. Remember that. So I don't want your vote. So there's no point you having an opinion on me. It doesn't matter. I need nothing from you. I want nothing from you. What I need you to be worried about is in the next election, how are you going to vote to define your own hopes and your own futures? Now, if I happen not to be your choice, that's also okay. But then the question I then have after that is, if I'm not your choice, are you then willing enough to say, me as Chris, I am going to lift my hand up and say, AC doesn't do it too well, I can do it better. What matters is how are we moving forward? Because you can pick one part of, you know, of what I said on one day, and you can pick one part of what Mugabe said on one day. It's so retrogressive because we're not going forward. We're just constantly talking about what happened in the past.
I agree, but you can't deny that we have it is a crisis, it's a problem of personality politics in this country, maybe even, you know, wider in the whole of Africa, where you have this big man situation, mm-hmm. where, and in this country it's far worse, you have personalization of political parties. Mm-hmm. And that's just a perception that exists within the society, mm-hmm. right? So, and which is why you then have statements like One Center of Power, which I've stated countless times on this podcast that I'm extremely against, because it takes away, as you put out, from the fact that political parties are not homogeneous entities, mm-hmm. right? So that perception, though, exists within the society. How are you working to work against that perception, especially with relation to you and with relation to Viva and the work that it is that you're trying to do?
It's very simple. You have to create, you know, the opposites of power, or rather checks and balances. And one of the things we push as a political institution is anyone who's running for political office, public office, that is, cannot occupy a party position. So you cannot be, so for example, I chair the party. I cannot be chairman of the party and then I'm also an MP, or then I'm also a councillor, or then I'm also a senator. There has to be a place or a point where there is checks and balances. So as long as you occupy a position in the party, you are exempt or you are barred from contesting for a position publicly, because the party has to keep tabs on you. And the only way we keep tabs on you is if we're not conflicted at the very same time. The reason you have such things as One Center of Power is when you have a president who's the commander-in-chief of the defense forces, who's the first secretary of ZANU-PF, who's the One Center of Power, who's the, you know, he occupies, you know, he holds in his hands the keys to all the doors. It's very difficult to talk to him about what's happening in any of those in any of those doors because he holds the keys. So how we deal with it is we simply separate the two. So while you find me chairing the party, for as long as the party wants me to chair it, I cannot contest in any public office. Should I decide I now want to be an MP, I now must relinquish of one position so I focus on the other. And I think that's how you manage the idea of supermans in politics.
I think, I agree with that sort of method of organization. Well, two things do then immediately come to mind, particularly given the whole situation and the context of Zim that we're in. Clearly, Viva is a youth party. You may have 210 candidates, but you don't have a presidential candidate at the moment. Mm-hmm. And even if you, as chairperson, was a presidential candidate, you still fall outside of the constitutional means. So are you looking for a presidential candidate, or are you going to join the coalition of opposition parties? Because essentially, whatever you say, whatever else, it may be a youth party, but it is a youth opposition party.
Mm. Okay. So,
so
a couple of things you've raised there. One is, who is our presidential candidate? And two is, are we going to join the coalition? So let's talk about who's going to be our presidential candidate. You must be a presidential candidate based on the deployment of the people. So some sort of Congress must ascertain that we nominate Chris to be the presidential candidate. Or Chris can then say, that type of Congress, I would like to be a presidential candidate. Now, we haven't really had that. For reasons I wish were not there, we haven't been able to fund a Congress. We haven't been able to mobilize or organize it together yet. So yes, we don't have one yet. And if we had to support one, leading to your next question, are we going to be joining the coalition? The trouble with this coalition is, I don't know exactly what we're joining. So maybe you can school me a little, because I am completely clueless on what we are joining and what that thing which we are joining has to do with the aspirations of young people, number one. But number two, how on earth this coalition intends on beating ZANU-PF in the next election?
I don't know. A lot of people would say that, you know, the coalition, in fact, it's my personal view as well, that the coalition is the best chance that any of us have in beating ZANU-PF in 2018, purely because by sheer force of numbers, by sheer unity, you'd be able to defeat this monolith that's ZANU-PF. So I think that is one of those situations that you can't find out what is in the coalition for Viva without being part of those discussions, without being part of the talk. So is it not a situation where, you know, these things are still ongoing? It's a very fluid situation. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't you want to be at the table to hear and learn? And this goes, you know, for everyone. I'm talking in terms of other, you know, not necessarily opposition, but other activists and everyone like that. Mm-hmm. You don't know what it is about, but you have an opportunity to go to the table and hear while it's being formulated. Viva...
It's not that I don't know what it's about. They don't know what it's about. Okay, so from the get-go, you know, from the idea of NERA, and I don't refuse to participate in these things because I'm a selfish narcissist who wants to beat his own chest, but I also like reason that is put in the context of political play. From the first time I was called to come and join NERA, I asked questions that I had no straight answers to, right up until I was called again to come and participate in the conversations about the coalition. And it's the same things that haven't been answered.
What sort of questions are
these? So when the conversation of NERA began, Didmus Mtasa was still clearly in charge of it at that point, is I asked, so you're asking me to come to the table to discuss pushing for electoral reforms. Can you tell me if you believe that electoral reforms are actually going to come? Do you believe in your head that there is going to be a circumstance where Robert Mugabe is going to change his security chiefs because you've made noise? And no one could give me a straight yes. Then I said, okay, let me ask a second question. Where do you get the authority from to go to Robert Mugabe and demand a constitutional mandate that he has to appoint whatever security chief that he wants to appoint? And then there's no way you're getting this power from. So I struggle with a body that is absolutely no legal basis, that is absolutely no legal mandate, that decides it wants to go and pursue a journey that it knows is not going to come up with any result, but they do it because the donors want the money. I mean, the donors want to see it so the donors can give you money. So when politicians now want to access donor money, we begin to create these crazy-looking organizations because it appeals to donors. NERA is not going to achieve one electoral reform. And for that reason, instead of spending 12 months pushing an agenda for NERA, I would rather spend 12 months trying to figure out how to win in constituencies. Now, we move past NERA.
Before you move past that, that logic seems flawed because you yourself took part in rallies and marches and demos that may not necessarily have been NERA ones. They may have been this flag ones. They may have all of those things. These are all the same arguments people use against any form of activism in Zimbabwe.
It's the same.
You're trying to push. So, are you saying in yourself that your peers... Linda, Pavson, this flag, Pasa E, all these people's work is essentially flawed because they're not going down to the ground to the constituency and are not pushing reforms from the constituency up.
Okay, now, Tawanda, it's very important you separate politicians and activists. NERA is a coalition of political parties that have gone to do activism. Activism is being carried out. The other activism is referring to is being carried out by exclusive activists who are not necessarily politicians. But
it's disingenuous for those people to not say that they're activists, first of all. They're not, they're political activists. They're against the government. They're political in their nature.
They are.
I think it's disingenuous. It's a false equivalent.
The point I think matters more, which you're asking is, so AC, you've been out there supporting Kudamsa Siwa, supporting Pastor E at some of their rallies. So why then would you say you don't support NERA? Even when I went to support any of these people, before they're activists, they are my friends. And I've always made it very clear, I do not support activism. I do not think activism is the correct pathway to get electoral reform. I think they should be spending that energy on a political process. However, because they are my friends who stand in solidarity with me, I choose to stand in solidarity with them. I am not an activist when you see me sharing a Tea Party video. I'm not an activist when you see me sharing this flag video. I share them because I resonate with the message. I support what my friend is trying to do. Doesn't mean I necessarily have to agree with it. Surely, I can support what you guys are doing with this podcast. Doesn't necessarily mean I agree with you. I've never changed my position on activists. I believe there is a space in society for activists, and it should not be taken away from them. I am just not inclined to that space. I am a politician 100%. I believe in political processes. I believe in the political game. That's why I play the political game. I'm not an activist. I don't understand activism. I don't agree that activism is going to bring the result, but I do agree and understand that it is a space to play. Let it play that space. I'm not going to indulge myself too much into what they're doing right or wrong, because that's neither here nor there. It's their space, not mine.
So
yeah, fair enough.
So the coalition.
So moving to the coalition.
Yeah. So the
problem I had with the coalitions, and I got two phone calls from the coalitions and from people who I regard very highly. One from one is still in MDC, one has now left MDC, but both I regard very highly. And they said, well, we want to talk to you, want to take you to, Dr. Changirai, so we can figure out how to fit you into the coalition. My issue with the coalition is this. The last election, ZANU-PF had a little over 2 million votes, MDC had a little over 1 million votes. There is a million vote gap. That's what's there. So the job of the coalition, when you speak of the coalition, Tawanda says it's our only best hope of beating ZANU-PF. So you're talking about this opposition has to create a million new votes. That's the way for them to catch up. And then it has to have more votes for them to beat ZANU-PF. Now, if you asked me, do I think that Maimu Juru, Tendai Biti, Washman Ngube, and whoever else is signed onto the coalition, plus Changirai together, create a new million votes? Does their coming up create 1 million new votes in this country? Does it inspire a young person to vote? It definitely doesn't inspire me. It definitely doesn't inspire anybody I know. So no. So why would I then again go to join a situation where I genuinely believe Robert Mugabe will beat them? Whichever of those guys you put forward under that particular setup is going to get a thorough beating from Robert Mugabe. Why then should I go and spend time on that when I could spend the exact same time in the constituency making sure that Chris wants to win in Marlborough and Chris has got a chance to take a parliamentarian seat? Because Chris You and me have got absolutely, whether you and me participate or we don't, the Robert Mugabe, Morgan Tsvangirai Mamujuri era will inevitably take care of itself, whether you and me participate or we don't. What we can change is Chris in Marlborough. I can ensure that you win in Marlborough because they can rig the presidential election. I don't know if they can rig all the parliamentary, even I know they can't rig the parliamentary elections. So I would rather put my focus where the small resources we have can afford. So no, I'm not, I gracefully thanked them for inviting me. I also gracefully turned it down, and I will continue to gracefully turn it down. You will not find a situation where Lumumba, at least at a personal level, has said, I am now going to be part of a coalition that's going to get beaten up by Robert Mugabe. All the coalition does is give Robert Mugabe one target. Before, he had a lot of targets to beat. Now he's got one target to beat, makes the life easier for him. And that coalition versus Robert Mugabe, they're going to lose to Robert Mugabe. You can play this back a year from now and we'll see if I was right.
I hope you're wrong, comrade. I never got it wrong,
Tawanda. I never got nothing about politics wrong.
I think that if you... You've run in Hatfield how many times and how many have you won?
I never got it wrong. In fact, bring that back. So, first of all, you're right that I have ran and you haven't. So... I can school you.
My
couple,
point.
I can school
that's
you a couple
why,
of
but,
things about
but
running.
I wanted but, you but, to use your own experience to see why you should be in the coalition. Because I personally don't think that you are a significantly worse candidate than Mashakada and Hatfield there. But you won. You didn't win not because of that. You won because you just were simply in the wrong party for your constituency. It had nothing to do with your personal qualities. Okay, I don't think on paper he was significantly a better candidate than you. You had done significantly more for your constituency than you had, but I just think that because he was in the right party and he was in Harare, he won. And if you were to then translate that to the whole entire country and you had strong candidates of a coalition in every constituency that they could compete in, you have a serious game on ZANU, and you've seen it yourself, is that they're not all powerful, not overarching, not all seeing, all knowing.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Winning based on your jacket or losing based on your jacket. You are absolutely right. So the as all of us, we must learn to think of politics from a much grander level than the level we're thinking of it at right now. So the institutions that need a Robert Mugabe to stay in power, the organizations or companies that need Robert Mugabe to stay in power, they know one thing, and that one thing is they have to protect the vehicle. Because once you protect the vehicle, you can deal with the individuals later. The individuals don't matter. It's let's protect vehicles, ZANU-PF, to stay in power, so that once it stays in power, we can then clean our house up later. So come 2018, the focus of ZANU-PF is to protect the vehicle. The vehicle must have the presidency. Once they have the presidency, they can deal with everything else. So to the extent of your jacket or not your jacket at constituency level, when people say ZANU-PF cannot be beat, this is why I always then differ with them, because you are right. In Hatfield, where I did run in 2013, and I was a novice, I was only a 20, 23, 24-year-old kid, ZANU-PF didn't win. And I was one of the lead riggers. So if with all my rigging abilities, I couldn't rig enough.
What do you mean you were one of the lead riggers? In what sense?
Well, as a disclaimer, I think elections are rigged everywhere in the world. But in the sense that Tapiwa Mashakada could not have one rally in Hatfield during 2013 election. Not one rally. If I saw one of his cars coming to campaign, we made sure there was a shutdown. We would send rally. By the time he gets there, but even with all of that, the reason why he still went on to win is that could only maybe give us an extra 5% margin or an extra 10% margin. But still made sure that the MDC jacket won. But the reason they won in Hatfield, like they won in Kuwadzana, like they won in Harare Central, is because one thing ZANU-PF cannot beat is the numbers. They can beat margins, but they can't beat large numbers. And in 2013, these places, I mean, Tendai beat his constituency, your father, that's one of the constituencies we couldn't rig, when I was in ZANU-PF. Because how do you rig a constituency where your dad is a rock star in that constituency? Like a bona fide rock star. So no matter what you do to rig Tendai Biti's constituency, you can't rig it because the numbers don't lie. And because of that, I am genuinely convinced that if the so-called coalition had the numbers, we would have seen those numbers already. Because all the numbers you're talking about in the coalition are numbers from 2013. When you really look at that coalition, it's just MDC 2013 all over again. That's all those numbers.
No. I disagree. It's MDC 2008, because that's the last time you would have a really truly unified opposition on the back of a disunified ZANU-PF, on the back of extreme economic problems. And that's the trifecta. That's what you need. You need a unified opposition. Coalition will give us that. You need a disunified ZANU. The factions in ZANU are probably going to give us that. And the third thing you need, unfortunately, is you need a situation economically and socially that's going to create a situation where ZANU is not popular, even in the rural areas, because people don't have money.
You're also not very wrong. And I would like to shut talking about other political parties down pretty quickly, so get back to talking about us. But you are right. But the one thing you are also missing, which is a very big factor, Tawanda, is in 2008, you were talking about a very heavily funded MDC. You know, like I said from the very get-go, elections are all about cash. In 2008, MDC had way more money than ZANU-PF did. In 2013, MDC had money, but nothing to the extent ZANU-PF has. And in fact, in 2018, when you look at the political budgets right now, ZANU-PF is definitely ahead on budgets right now than MDC is. So there's also a huge money factor there. And can this coalition raise money? I think part of putting it together was the sponsors the political appetite from the global political, financial political community wanted to see a coalition. But do I think it warrants them to beat ZANU-PF? Again, it's something I'd like us to have this conversation sometime next year after the elections, and I'd like to tell you I told you.
Your perception right now is ZANU-PF is going to win 2018.
No, my perception right now is ZANU-PF will beat that coalition any day.
So who won't they beat? Who won't they beat?
Good question. Now, I am of the opinion there has to be another way. I am of the opinion there has to be a third alternative when you start talking about political opposition. I'm glad we've got these, you know, political parties opposition out of the way. So now that tells us everyone we should not worry about. What I think is now going to happen is you're going to see, and the world trend has shown us this. France has just shown us this. You know, Donald Trump showed us this. You're going to have someone who is not in the political setup right now, I think, or even in the political setup, but who steps out of it, comes into the open and says, I am going to lead a new direction. But this person has to speak to a specific generation, and this generation he has to speak to is a generation of virgin voters. The candidate who appeals to virgin voters is the candidate who wins. I'll give you a casual example. Had the Pastor E moment happened 3 months before a general election, Pastor E would be president, would be the next president of Zimbabwe. Had it happened 3 months before a general election, because that hype and momentum and the idea that this person is someone from the outside is what people want. I think there's a genuine, you know, and warranted distrust from the public when they look at the current active political players. So I don't think anyone in the coalition is the right candidate. I really wish Tendai Biti hadn't joined, because I think he has always been onto something, but I understand the pressure if he ends up joining or if he hasn't joined already. But who's going to be the next president of Zimbabwe if it can't be Robert Mugabe? It's going to be a third alternative. Not anyone in the coalition. Now, who are the names people are speaking about? I've been hearing the name Kosana Moyo coming up often. He's someone I know, someone I've met. I think Kosana Moyo can absolutely, absolutely thrash Robert Mugabe. He can absolutely do it. Will he run? I don't know. I've heard James Makamba might throw his hat in. Absolutely, he can thrash. I think anybody can beat Robert Mugabe, you know, provided you've got the correct amount of money. Why do I say these people can do it? Is number one, I believe they've got the ability to raise the cash, because that's what I think is the first thing. Number two, I believe they have the ability to inspire a younger generation, which is the you and me. They can inspire, you know, you Chris, have a higher chance of bringing new voters in the next election than Tendai Biti has in his wildest imagination. Your friends alone make more new voters that you can bring in than Maimu Njuru can in a wildest imagination. So the ability to make you, Chris, be interested in participating enough to go and get your friends, that's what I think wins the next election. So Robert Mugabe can be beat, and he must be beat. I just don't think he's going to be beat by anybody in the coalition, especially Tsvangirai.
So as a prerequisite to that, we need to get people registered to vote then.
We do, because but registering to vote is not
that's,
hard.
That's though. Really, for really, that's that seems to me is where the whole election is going to be won or lost, is if there's not enough pressure for ZEC to begin registering, voting with this whatever system they have within time, then, you know, otherwise nothing happens. Because if we're talking about 2013 numbers, mm-hmm. you can do 2013 numbers based off new voters at all. So you can say MDC, you get your MDC, ZANU, you get your ZANU PF votes. Mm-hmm. We're going to run with people who've never voted before.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to register.
Right. Absolutely. They do have to register. But you don't want to take the headache of getting people to register to vote from a mass scale. So I want, you know, so you live in Harare East, Tawanda, and it's easier for me to get Harare East virgin voters to vote if I've got Tawanda who lives in Harare East pushing that agenda in Harare East. But to get Tawanda to try and go and do the same thing in Muzarabani is a very complex exercise because you don't understand the demographic of Muzarabani. You understand the demographic of Harare East. And this is why it is essential to know who are our candidates first. Because what do you need the votes for? You know, so once you get the votes, what do you need them to do? You need them to vote for someone at a constituency and a ward level. So it's those captains of those wards or those constituencies that need to go and get the virgin vote, the new voters to register. But you can only get to that stage, Chris, once you have identified where do we want these registered voters to eventually vote for. The reason why there will not be an avalanche of registered voters is people will always ask the question, but who am I registering to vote for? What's my business registering to vote? I don't have I'm not inspired to register. But when I put Chris in the field and I say, well, in Greendale, you're registering to vote because Chris is a candidate. They'll say, oh, we know that kid. We grew up with that kid. We went to school with him. You know, we know his girlfriend. We know his mom. We pray with his dad. We drink with his brothers. Then they can register to vote. But also, our generation, in Ndazunu, no nakiza. I'll give you an example. If I bring Chris Brown to Zimbabwe and I say criteria to enter the Chris Brown concert is you must be a registered voter, you'll be amazed how many people all of a sudden know where you registered to vote. We're now a generation that, you know, before we couldn't pay attention to a 1 minute Facebook video, now we can barely pay attention to a 10 second Snapchat video. Snapchat is that 3 seconds? Your our attention span is gone. So Pastor E's court day was filled the first time he went to court, not because people like justice, but selfie on that day. How I know
I got some dope selfies from that day.
I know people were not there for justice is the very next day the Epworth and Mavuku activists were in court on the identical matter, but no one was there in court for them because we're not here for the issue. We're here for the runagiza. So that's why people were there. But your ability to also make Van Gudwana Kirwe warrants you to be able to get popular. I mean, Donald Trump, he spoke to what people wanted to hear, and today he's the president of perhaps the most powerful nation in the world.
You spoke about the third way, and it's something that Themba Mliso, another guest who's been on our show, mm-hmm. has spoken about as well. And his plan to have, you know, independent candidates in every constituency, mm-hmm. and pretty much similar to what your project is. Do you see yourselves converging there? Are there some, you know, is this something that you think you could work with Themba, though?
Right. Let me talk about Themba. I've known Themba for quite a while, from when we were both in ZANU PF until I participated in him getting kicked out, and then we ended up
You participated in that. You need to tell us the story.
I mean, majority of the people who got kicked out of ZANU-PF, I was the kid who you sent to do that. When I say I'm a political maverick, I'm not trying to tout my own horn. You go ask them what they're out of ZANU-PF. They'll tell you Lumumba is a bad, bad man. If I want you out, you're gone. You see me in a fight with the bear, you pray for the bear. I don't say that as a joke. I say that as reality. You see me in a fight with the bear, you better go on your knees and pray for the bear. Now,
but Joao seems to have tamed you.
Joao hasn't tamed. Name me one thing Joao has done productively since I left his office.
Oh, you're outside. He's still there.
No, but he's there doing what? He's there doing absolutely nothing.
I know, but no, he's there eating his manika as a minister.
My point exactly. Doing nothing. If I was in politics for money, Tawanda, I would still be in ZANU-PF. Yeah. Remember, ZANU-PF didn't kick me out. People have this wrong misconception that somehow Lumumba was fired from ZANU-PF. No. I wrote a resignation letter, and they even tried to make me not go out. Till today, I am still talking to ZANU-PF about going back. They still talk about, what can we do to talk about you going back? Because the principle of ZANU-PF is they like people who like to win. So, but I want to go back to talking about Temba. We can come back to this later if you like. But I want to go back to talking about Temba. Having said everything I've just said about Temba, he is one of the politicians I have the most respect for. Because Temba is a grinder. I mean, going after Temba was one of the hardest things we did when I was in ZANU-PF. He is a difficult nut to crack because the boy works hard. The boy is very experienced. He was chairman of a whole province, one of the most important provinces to ZANU-PF in any election. So Temba knows exactly what politics is about. Now that Temba is out, would I be willing to, do I see a way where me and Temba can work together? I speak to Temba a lot. We've discussed areas of how we could work together. We just haven't gotten to that point of so where. I also, with all due respect, I say this. I think by default that Temba was kicked out, I wasn't. If Temba was given an option to go back to ZANU-PF. So if Kasukwere was no longer in ZANU-PF, which is, the real daddy that kicked him out, if Kasukwere was now out and he had a pathway to go back, would he go back? I reckon he would, because he's made it very clear his allegiances to Mnangagwa. So I think he would go back. Now, that's like unlike me. It doesn't matter who you remove from ZANU-PF, would I go back? No, because I just think its time has lapsed and we are now in a different time in history. But I have no reservations against him. But I respect his hustle. He's one of the politicians I respect the most. In fact, I respect him more than I respect 90% of the politicians in both ZANU-PF and MDC.
Okay. I think we've touched on most things. And I think a lot of people are going to really just want to know about you. But before we do that, not everyone's going to want to join Viva. Not everyone is going to want to join MDC. Not everyone's going to want to be an activist. Besides registering to vote, what's your advice to your fellow youth? What should we be doing?
So there's four things. Okay.
To make a space.
There's four things.
Yeah, go for it.
Everyone has to be thinking about what is my contribution to the next election. Number one, am I going to vote? So your basic responsibility to vote as a citizen is one thing you can do. Number two, am I going to contest? That's also something you have to be pondering on. Number three, am I going to mobilize money towards the candidates who are running, who I support? If you support a candidate, you have to be able to put money into them. If you support Tsvangirai, put your money where your mouth is. If you support Mugabe, put your money where your mouth is. If you support Tawanda Biti, put your money where your mouth is. Or Tendai Biti, put your money where your mouth is. And number four, can I join a campaign team that helps in the organizing of that candidate's campaign, whichever the candidate you support is? Those are the four ways you can actively get involved in politics as far as 2018 elections are concerned. And for that reason, this is why I keep saying to young people, stay away from all of these other things, all of these activisms, all of these NERA, what. Stay focused on those four things. Am I voting? Am I contesting? Am I putting my money where my mouth is? And am I campaigning? Those are the four ways, Tawanda. Those are the four ways that
matter. Okay. So that's good. Another thing that I think we mentioned it, but we didn't. I think we actually mentioned it before we started recording. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to you about ideology. I wanted to talk to you about, let's say, when speaking in July we're speaking in August of 2018,
right,
and Viva all of a sudden has 30 MPs, which is not a majority, but it's enough to choose who the next government is, or it's enough to tip the balance in parliament, or they have 50 or 70, you're still a chairperson. So you have some ideological direction you're going to take the party in. what, for example, is your stance on the economy? How would you deal with bond notes? What's your stance on, and these are questions no one has ever asked you, I don't think. I've never heard you speaking about those questions, because people so often just talk about AC, the person. But Amy, I'm interested with you. If you had, by a Malema type position where he all of a sudden finds himself trying to make decisions for a city council, what are some of your ideologies in terms of social structure, in terms of health, education, and the economy as a whole? You know some of the issues we're facing as a country.
Of course. So, you know, our fundamental sacrosanct mission is center point to all government decisions must be the prosperity of its people. There is no decision government is talking about, making, or thinking about that should not revolve around the prosperity of its people. The question then becomes, what is prosperity? So we have taken prosperity from the Global Prosperity Index, which defines prosperity, you know, in eight categories, which there's economic prosperity, there's entrepreneurial and opportunity prosperity, there's health prosperity, education prosperity, peace and security prosperity, social capital, and good governance. So those are the pillars that I believe we all fall in when we say prosperity. So to crisp prosperity might be to be able to access money from a loan so you can build an actual radio station to do this. That's your version of prosperity. That falls under entrepreneurship and opportunity. To my mother, prosperity might be to be able to go to hospital when she's ill and she doesn't have to pay huge medical bills. That falls under health. So the eight pillars of prosperity is what we are interested and focused on. Now, what do I think is the actual activities we need to be doing to push the agenda or to pave the pathway with this needs to happen? First of all, I must make a disclaimer. I don't have all the ideas. However, I am very sure that the young people of this country do have the ideas. But you brought one up, which is the bond notes. What do I think, how do you think you solve the problem with the bond notes? I've said before that the bond notes are a bandage. You had a wound on your body, and you needed to close this wound. And the only way you could close it at that time, because of the utensils or tools you had around you, was a bandage. So we've put a bandage on the economy, and what this bandage has done is it means queues are lesser than they were before the bond note. It means they are moving quicker than they were before the bond notes, but it doesn't solve the fundamental problem. The problem, you solve the issue of the bond notes, is we definitely do need our own currency in this country. You cannot have an economy that doesn't have its own currency, because your own currency allows you to produce. Once we are producing as a country, we are now able to trade, because the way the economy works is money has to come in for money to go out. For example, Chris has to be able to go to the bank. When Chris goes to the bank, he has to be able to borrow a loan to come and build a bigger radio station. When Chris is building a bigger radio station, he needs someone to supply microphones. He now gives some of that money to me. When you give some of that money to me, you've given me more money. When I now have more money because you're buying my microphones, I now have more money to pay my staff. When I have more money to pay my staff, they can buy more bread. When they can buy more bread, they can buy more sugar. When they can buy more sugar, our sugar producers or sugar plantations can begin to produce more. So the market is now responding to the money that is coming in from the market. So the only way you get to get rid of the bond notes and go back to our actual currency is we need a lot of cash inflow coming into the economy. So where does this cash come from? If money is what makes the world go around, like they say, where does this money come from? There's a couple of streams this money can come from. Number one, we have a huge diaspora market which puts money, diaspora population which puts money into the country. We need to build an environment that makes it comfortable for someone who's in Australia to say, I'm going to Zimbabwe and I'm going to put my money in. That means we now have money coming in. Number two, we need to be able to access international financial lines. So we need to be able to go to the IMF, the IFC, and we need to be able to borrow money and be able to access this money. That's another way money comes in. Everybody's in debt. America itself is in debt to China, of almost $3 trillion plus now. So debt, the debt cycle has to improve. And debt is what will ultimately make the economy go around. But we have to translate or use this debt with our own currency, because only our own currency allows us to control the cost of production. Without ability to deal with the cost of production, we can't grow the economy. Let me tell you the problem with not being able to control your cost of production. If you're using the US dollar, for example, this US dollar has to come from somewhere. So let's assume you're buying this US dollar from the Federal Reserve Bank in the United States. When you buy this US dollar, you're buying $1, but you're actually paying some money for that US dollar. So already before you've even used the US dollar, you've paid for it. So watone chikwereti, chekuripea mari yoyo before you've used it. So you are in debt before you've even done anything with the money. So there is no way your loaf of bread being produced by a US dollar can ever compete with the loaf of bread produced by US dollar in the United States. Because iyomarin deyavo, you have to borrow money from them, pay back money to them, and it's one huge bad debt structure that ends you up in that position. That's how you get rid of the bond notes.
Okay, I think we've had a pretty long discussion.
I think a lot of yeah.
I just want to no,
before you go on. Oh yeah.
Okay, you go ahead.
I was going to say a lot of people. I'm going to go ahead.
Clearly.
No. I just found it interesting. I think hearing the Zim dollar coming back is going to scare a lot of people. But it's good at least you have a plan. And at least it's detailed and hasn't thought out. We don't have time for me to disagree with you or to pick at some of the points, but at least it's something that I think people haven't heard before. You can now go ahead, Chris.
So my question to you is, you've said you are interested in getting young people to run and supporting young people to run. You've said that if you decide to run, then you'd have to step down as chairman of Viva. That is one of the structures that you have within Viva. Question is, come 2018, are you running? If you're running, in which constituency do you intend to run?
Okay, so come 2018, all else being equal, I am not running because I'd like to spend more time working in the constituencies of young people who have never run before and they don't know what to look for, what to look out for. So I'd like to spend more time investing in young people to run. I think I'll be more effective that way. So all else being equal, that's what I'd like to do. But if I was ever to run, which constituency would I run in? My passion would be naturally with Epworth, because that's the constituency I know the most and I care about the most if I had to pick one. But secondary to Epworth, probably Hatfield, because that's where I live now and that's where I've kind of been in my adult life. But either way, whichever constituency I run in, I'm winning. So
why didn't you run Epworth in 2013?
2013, the chairman of the then chairman of ZANU-PF Harare province was from Epworth. So, you know, political rank, you know, I was outranked.
Sure.
And then when he committed suicide, as you know, the president's niece, Zalera Makari, decided she wanted to run in Epworth, and I actually ran her campaign, and she won outstandingly. But again, kana mumbe ya mambo yapinda munda mako utindada kuraya mumbe ya mambo unto kumbira mambo nanchi kumbiro ijige badisa jige zvese.
And last question on someone asked from that, how do you stop ZANU-PF from rigging the election? You've said that this is something that happens. So how do you stop it from happening? Because all the 210 people that you have in your constituencies, as virgin candidates, they're going to have to campaign.
Yep, absolutely.
Right? Now, if they want to go out and have a rally, or I don't know what campaign strategies they are, perhaps you could shed some light on that. But if they want to have a rally, like you said, Pushka Wakomana Wengoma, they can't do that. And these are young people, right? So how do they work against that ZANU-PF system? And we've already seen they've got the cars, the Fords that are there, ready for campaigns. They've got the buses, the pictures of the buses that we saw ready for campaigns. How do they work against that?
I think it's two things. It's organization of your numbers and money. So if 500 ZANU-PF cadres come and they try to disrupt your rally and you have 2,000 people, believe me, I don't know 500 people in ZANU-PF who are brave enough to go against 2,000 people from anywhere. They are just very, you know, most of the people going to disrupt rallies are just drunk, easy to use, you know, condomized young people in ZANU-PF who are given a dollar to get drunk and then they're told go. Now, if you have more numbers than they do, your numbers will intimidate them so much that they won't come out. But even if they try to rig in the ballot box, rigging happens in a very short space of time. You know, rigging is between when you open the ballots to start counting to when you close them. So that's from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. 2013, contrary to what, you know, opposition parties have tried to make the world believe, it wasn't as rigged as people think it is. 2013, ZANU-PF genuinely won that election. They just rigged for the two-thirds majority. But they won that election. MDC got whooped in 2013.
Now, how do you say they won the election but then rigged for the two-thirds?
so,
So you're saying they won 50%.
No, so when I say win, but the other 25%.
Yeah, is winning
is considered, again, it's how do you judge winning, right? Is it electoral colleges or is it popular
50%,
vote?
They won 50%.
So, yeah, so they won, they were first past 50. So definitely Robert Mugabe won the election. But in order to win the election, you didn't need first past 50. You now needed two-thirds of the MP seats and the vote that and the correlation of the votes to now add up to be two-thirds of the total amount of votes casted. Now to do that,
yeah,
that needed a little work. And, you know, a little work was put in and a little work...
What sort of work?
So it ranges. It ranges. So I'll give you an example. If you take a constituency like Kwamsevenzi, and you go Kwamsevenzi, and what happens is in the electoral line in Kwamsevenzi, you then know that voting opens at 7 a.m. It closes at 7 p.m. So that means if you calculate that and you say how many people can possibly vote between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., you can come up with a number based on the type of demographic you're talking about there. So if I know that 2,000 people is all that can vote on that polling center, I can then bring a bus with 2,000 people who've already voted or who even haven't voted, and I can put them in the front of the queue from 4 a.m. So by the time 7 a.m. comes, the queue has 2,000 people. And these 2,000 people have a deliberate exercise to just delay everything. So they'll say, oh, okay, I can't remember the name of my candidate. Then they'll say, oh, actually, I can't see. Then they'll say, actually, can you read this out for me? Then they'll say, okay, I forgot my ID at home. I'm going and I'm coming back. So you've got 2,000 people wasting time, and these 2,000 people are strategically behind the 500 that ZANU-PF would know is their cell members or their party members. So you've got the 500 of our Pinda. Now, your 500 voters are behind these 2,000. And they're looking at a queue of 2,000 people, and they're thinking, do I really wait in this queue? And now they're like, okay, I'm tired. They take a lunch break. They sit down. Everything's just getting hot. And deliberately, the exercise is to delay everything so that then the guy gets out, the ZANU-PF person goes in, they vote. And you're constantly behind. And then a little scuffle starts, you know, a little what looks like a fight, but it's not really a fight. And it's not even a fight. You can't really accredit the fight to ZANU-PF or to MDC. It's just two people who've decided they want to start fighting. And you can't, you know, it's not fair to say, it's two people who are fighting at the polling center. Now all of your attention is now stuck on those two people. Police say, for 3 hours, you go back in the queue. By the time it's your turn to vote, it's 7 p.m. and you're now tired. You're like, and the distance you've walked to get to your polling center is so great that it's getting dark. You can't risk walking at night. So you say, it's 5 o'clock, I need to start going home. You go home. And then the 2,000 people simply get picked up in buses. They go to the actual polling center, and then they vote, and you've lost the election. It's engineering.
Fair enough. I think that's the most detailed account of how elections are rigged in this
of
country.
One method. There's multiple other ones.
But the reason I'm not doing a book is, you know, maybe we might want to rig this. By the way, I never said I have a problem with rigging. You know, I think may the best rigger win. You know, I don't necessarily have a problem with rigging. I think if that's the game we're playing, and let's all rig and keep it moving.
Wow.
All right. I don't know if you have any other questions, Chris.
No, I'm done.
You
want
to talk about factions, but you know we don't have.
We don't have time for that.
No, I know we're tired. We're tired of factions.
I
think everyone knows is all the factions in this. Although I would always be interested to know how your relationship with some of the people still inside ZANU-PF is going, because I've always found that a lot of the things that people get shocked at is how close and cordial even opposition and ZANU-PF members are, whether they're in parliament, whether Mbakwao. Zuma newspaper does really give people a real story. Because yes, you might be tugging each other in the newspapers or whatever, but people have genuine human relationships that are outside of politics. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know, I'm not going to mention any names, but you know probably some of the mentors you had within the party, how that relationship is going, seeing as you've left.
Well, I guess the one mentor I did have in ZANU-PF above everybody else is people know and like to always come back to is Xavier Kasukwere. look, I can't change it. The man mentored me in politics. I entered politics and I got to where I am because he was always there to kind of play the big brother. But he was my mentor then, and now he is my... Now we're competing against each other. The faction he belongs to, do I think he's going to win? I hope he does, because at least it's a younger faction. It's a younger faction. But what I really want is I want to beat all of them. I want to beat him and his faction and the other faction. I want to take them all out. But do I still have a relationship with him? To the extent that it's, you know, a relationship outside of politics, yes. But a relationship in politics, no. I've got no... We're now in different political parties, and I have every intention of taking them all out in the next election.
All right.
Like he does me.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, AC, for your time. Good interview. I really enjoyed that. And to all our listeners, thanks for listening.
I always say it's good to have people and have these conversations, especially when you disagree with somebody. Because I'll say, if you listen to some of our previous podcasts, I've had very few kind words for some of the things that you've done.
You'll be calling me out.
That business. AC actually called it out on one of his Facebook things, and he says, "Sha, can we just, you know, people have amorous relationships and those things happen. Apana singa zviite. So can we focus on the issues?"
Oh, because you know yours is floating around.
Yeah, hey, Sha.
But just quickly, guys. So, just so you know, it's not that I haven't heard what you guys have said about me in your last podcast.
Because no, fair enough.
Every time you make a podcast, I've got one of the kids under me who calls and says, "Oh, do you know, so
BT
thinks he can dig into you now. This Charamba guy thinks he can dig into you now." But the reason you see I never respond to either you or anybody else is I understand that you don't know me. So you only know what you read that was written by somebody else who also didn't know me. And I've always said you don't microwave trust. You know, trust is built over time. When we speak like this, the next time we see each other on the street, it's like, "Hey, can I buy you a beer?" So over time, can I get to a place where I trust you and you trust me? I don't have a problem with people liking or not liking me. I mean, I don't wake up in the morning and think about that. I just have a problem with people who close the door and say, "So I'm never going to talk to you." As long as we are willing to talk to each other, at some point, we will find something we agree on. We might agree that the same girl is pretty. We might agree that the same girl is built nicely. But, you know, those who hate me want to be me, you know, and those who don't like me probably want to be with me. What you want me to say? I'm sorry. It's painful to be this fly. Why wouldn't you want to be like
me? Man's is about to drop a freestyle.
We have a rap podcast, if that's your thing. It's called Keep It Real Friday, so you can come and drop some bars on that.
All the time.
Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for everyone for listening. This is
Keep It Up, guys.
And Beyond on Capital 263.
Yep. Where can people find you online? Just to, you know.
Yeah, so on Facebook, I'm ACIE Lumumba. My public Facebook page is Lumumba, Lumumba, Lumumba. You say it three times so you don't have to forget it. My Twitter is at the Lumumba Playbook. So is my Instagram, at the Lumumba Playbook. Otherwise, you can find me in 2018 pushing for young candidates to get into office. So you can wait 11 to 12
running
years.
Running in Epworth.
Or you can wait 11 to 12 years and you find me running for president.
Oh.
All right. Thanks. Thanks so much, AC.
All right, guys.
Cheers. And now. Capital 263.